you, Chase. Today, we are starting a new series. You know, even in Lent, we like to eat. And so there's a lot of eating. Jesus does a lot of eating in the Bible, sharing meals. And that's why we're doing this new series called Around the Table, because the way Jesus eats with people, the people that he eats with is really an important part of his message. And so understanding all of this helps us to understand who he is and what he came to do. Now, this particular meal, Levi's party or Matthew's party, is really about the new life that Jesus brings. You know, the last part of the passage about new wineskins and cloths, you know, patches, putting on, you know, old garments. Essentially what Jesus is saying is, I bring a newness of life that shatters or bursts all the old categories. You know, they simply can't contain what Jesus is doing. And so in this passage, I want us to think about, what is it that we learn about this new life? And I think we learn two things, or at least two things that we have time to talk about this morning. A new priority. The new life brings a new priority, and it brings a new proximity. A new priority and a new proximity. So let's start with a new priority. And we're not going to spend much time here, but I do want to say a few things. The new life begins with a call. As Jesus went on from there, he saw a man named Matthew sitting at the tax collector's booth. Now, no doubt, Jesus passed by, saw Matthew frequently there at his tax booth. But this particular day, he passes by and he says, "Follow me," he told him. Matthew got up and followed him. The Bible essentially says all Christians have been called. In Romans 8:28, verse talk about a lot, it says, God causes all things to work together for the good to those who love him and are called according to his purpose. So everyone who loves God has been called. What is a call? What does it mean? Essentially, it means a call means you've given up control. You know, that's what we see in Matthew. Jesus says, "Follow me." He just gets up and goes. There's no hesitation mentioned, no nothing. It's just, "Follow me," boom, he gets up, he goes. Everything is changed. He leaves behind his tax booth. You know, not all calls look the same. Matthew's call looks different from Paul's, you know, on the Damascus Road when Jesus appears to him. I mean, very dramatic. Not all calls look the same, but all calls have that same result. They result in real change because the person who is called comes to the realization that Jesus has to be central to their life. He has to be in control. Nothing else can be more important than him. You know, by bringing Jesus home and inviting his friends in to share this evening meal, which the evening meal really was the heart of Jewish family life. You know, to invite Jesus into that, Matthew was in essence bringing Jesus just right into the very center of his life. And when we hear Jesus' call, you know, "Come follow me," we realize that we have a new priority. Jesus has to be the most important thing. And when that happens, everything starts to change. And so that's just a little bit that I want to say about the new priority that comes when Jesus calls, when he says, "Follow me." The new life brings a new priority, but it also brings a new proximity. And this is really where I want to spend most of the time this morning. Jesus comes close to Matthew. And that's what, it's an important thing if we invite someone to dinner. It was even a much more important thing in that culture. It was a big, big deal to share meals with people. And so in doing this, Jesus comes close. It says, while Jesus was having dinner at Matthew's house, many tax collectors and sinners came and ate with him and his disciples. When the Pharisees saw this, they asked his disciples, why does your teacher eat with tax collectors and sinners? Now that phrase, tax collectors and sinners, you read it frequently in the Gospels. Who are they referring to? Well, tax collectors, we know who they are. They collect taxes. Why were they so hated? Well, because they were Jewish people who were collecting taxes for the Roman government. They were traitors. And because of that, they were just considered scum. They were unfaithful Jews. Now, this term sinners, that's not just a reference to, well, we're all sinners. To say sinners means notorious sinners. So who would have been included in those kinds of people? Well, money lenders who are kind of related to tax collectors, but money lenders who often cheated people, that's how, essentially charging exorbitant interest. People like prostitutes. There's a list of kind of people that would fit into that category. Those were Matthew's friends. And he invites them over because he wants them to meet Jesus. So the Pharisees, though, this is a big problem. It's a big problem because they're concerned about contamination, which is all about proximity, right? We get this. If someone has the flu and we hang out with them, and then the next day they call and they say, oh, bummer, I got the flu, right? You're like, oh, I'm going to get the flu because I was with them. Well, the Pharisees believed this was true, not only physically, but they believed it was true morally and spiritually. So by eating, by coming into proximity with tax collectors and sinners, people who were morally and spiritually corrupt, then in the Pharisees' mind, that meant that Jesus too would become morally and spiritually corrupt. And so this is the part of the sermon where we beat up on the Pharisees, right? Actually, no. I could, but I'm going to choose not to here. And actually, in some sense, I think it's important to know they do have kind of a point. It says very clearly in 1 Corinthians 15:33, bad company corrupts good character. We often underestimate the power of community in shaping us and in determining who we become. We are not just the product of our own individual choices. We are also shaped by those who are around us, right? We know this is true. Meals are incredibly relational modes. They're personal. And you will be influenced. You will be shaped by people who are around your table. For example, in college, I spent the summers working at Colonial Presbyterian Church in what was called the summer staff. There's like 25 of us college students who are hired for the summer, or live together, do ministry together with the youth and all that kind of stuff. And it was the most formative experience of my Christian life, without a doubt. And you know, we did all kinds of things together. We read the Bible together. We prayed together. We served together. We did all these things together. Everything was together. But the most impactful part of it, the most shaping part of it, were not those things, but it was actually just the informal times together, often sitting around tables, sharing meals together, and just talking with each other about what God was doing in our lives. You know, you think about the Old Testament dietary laws. If you've read that in the Old Testament, you know how lengthy and tedious they are. It's like, oh my gosh, really? There were so many details. There's no way that a faithful Jew could sit down at a table to share a meal with anyone other than another faithful Jew. What's the point of that, you ask? Well, maybe you're starting to connect the dots. That is the point. We don't want you sharing table with outsiders, pagans, people who might corrupt you, who will contaminate you with their beliefs and practices. It was a powerful, powerful tool that helped the Jews maintain their distinct identity as the people of God over the centuries. But then comes along Jesus, who is a Jew, but he totally turns these laws and rules and regulations on their heads. And this just shocked, horrified, and infuriated the Pharisees. They believed that Jesus was being contaminated, spiritually defiled by these bad people. And what does Jesus say? Why did he just blow this stuff off? Jesus says it right here. On hearing this, Jesus said, "It is not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick." The sick need a doctor. And on the surface, that sounds great, right? He's the great doctor of our souls. But remember the context. If the doctor is treating people with Ebola virus, then what does the doctor have to make sure that he or she doesn't do? Doesn't get Ebola virus, right? Because then how helpful are they going to be? They're not going to be helpful at all. And that's what the Pharisees are thinking. Proximity, contamination, infection through contact. But Jesus is not like them. He doesn't have those worries. He's not walking around with gloves and a surgical mask. He's right in the middle of it. And it doesn't say that he was preaching to them about, you know, that they what they needed to do with their lives or whatever. He's just right there in the middle of them, presumably having a good time at the party, at dinner. How can this be? Well, Matthew 9 starts to make a little bit more sense when you read Matthew 8. And in Matthew 8, there's an incredible incident that takes place with Jesus and a leper. A leper comes and throws himself at Jesus' feet. Now, lepers, they were the worst of the worst. They were absolutely contaminated. They were unclean physically, morally, spiritually. You know, physically, they had a disease, a skin disease, and people didn't want to get it. They were not allowed in town. They weren't allowed to approach people. They were, you know, outcasts of the worst kind. They were not allowed in the temple because they were considered to be spiritually and morally unclean. They thought, well, if you have leprosy, that means God is judging you. He is judging you with that leprosy because you must have sinned in some way. They were considered in every way to be unclean. But this leper, in violation of what he's supposed to do, he comes into town, finds Jesus, and throws himself at his feet and says something remarkable. He says, "Lord, if you are willing, you can make me clean." This leper knows that Jesus can do it and that it's not even hard for Jesus. He just has to want it to happen, and it will happen. And then Jesus does something even more remarkable. He reaches down and touches him. That was a no-no. You don't touch lepers. It was against the law. And that's precisely why he did it. He didn't have to touch him. He could have just said, be clean. But he intentionally wanted to break this law. Who says you can't touch a leper? He touches the leper. I am willing, be clean. And he's healed. He's cleansed. Jesus breaks another law. It says if you come in contact with a leper, you have to immediately go to the priest, and the priest has to perform all this ceremonial cleansing, so you'll be okay. He doesn't do that. Jesus is shattering all the categories. He's bursting all the old wineskins. Here's what he's doing. You know, throughout history, we've understood it this way. When healthy people come in contact with the infected, the healthy people become infected, right? When the clean people, you know, when the clean becomes in contact with the clean becomes unclean. And really, all religion is based upon that idea. That you work very hard to make yourself good enough for God, good enough for heaven. Which means you've got to stay away from the defiled people, from the immoral people, from the unclean, because they might bring you down. And Jesus touches this man, and here's what he's saying. Nothing can make me unclean. Nothing can make me unclean. And furthermore, he's saying, anyone that I touch, no matter how defiled, no matter what they've done, no matter how ashamed they may feel, no matter what has been done to them, no matter how unclean or stained, no matter what, if Jesus touches them, they become instantly clean. Jesus is saying, look, you can't defile me. My holiness overcomes your uncleanliness. You don't make yourself fit for God by obeying rules and regulations and staying away from bad people. Jesus is saying, look, I make you fit for God. When you come into relationship with me, he's saying, look, infection starts to work in reverse. The clean begins to infect the unclean with cleanliness. That's why when you come into a relationship with Jesus, it changes the way that you relate to the world. Notice in verse 10, it's not just Jesus who goes to the party. Who goes with him? His disciples, right? His followers, they go there with him. Why do they do that? You know, religion creates a fragile holiness. A fragile holiness. All religion about trying to earn our self-worth to make ourselves fit for God. When that's the case, our holiness is always going to be fragile because you never know if you're good enough. Have you done enough? And there's an insecurity built in, so you have to stay away from the bad people, from the defiled, from the sinners, because they will, in essence, bring you down. But when you understand Jesus, you know that he changes all that. Jesus says, I make you clean. No more codes, no more regulations. Jesus gives us that unshakable self-worth. When you know that Jesus loves you and that he makes you clean, that means you can move out into the world differently, not afraid. You can move out into the world with confidence that through contact and community, Jesus' love and grace can work through you to actually infect other people. Now, how does Jesus do this? How does he give us his holiness? Just with a touch. How does he do it? Well, the answer is here. John's disciples come to Jesus and ask why his disciples don't fast. So here's the deal. Jesus is at this party with Matthew and his friends, and the word is out. The word gets out. And the Pharisees are there. John the Baptist, his disciples are there. And they're saying, we don't get it. We're fasting, and we're doing all this stuff. We're keeping all the rules. And your disciples, they don't do any of this stuff. What's up with that? And Jesus says, how can the guests of the bridegroom mourn while he is with them? The time will come when the bridegroom will be taken from them, then they will fast. What does that mean, the bridegroom will be taken from them? It's probably a quote from Isaiah 53, verse 8, about the suffering servant. It says, by oppression and judgment he was taken away. He was cut off from the land of the living. And there's the answer to the whole riddle. How can Jesus make the unclean clean? How does he give us his holiness with a touch? The answer is because our sin was given to him. That's the great exchange. He took our diseases. It says, by his stripes we are healed. He became an outcast. He was crucified outside the city gates. He, in essence, became like a leper. He was excluded. He was beaten and driven out. His holiness can come to us because he took our sin. 2 Corinthians 5:21 says it point blank. God made him who knew no sin to be sin for us, so that in him we might become the righteousness of God. Now let me ask you, if you live in that new reality where Jesus takes your sin and he gives you his holiness, does that change everything? Of course. It changes everything. When that becomes your reality, how can you still live by the old thinking, the old wineskin that says, well, here's all the bad people and here's all the good people, and I'm just going to kind of stay over here because I don't want to get, you know, I don't want to get infected. How can you live that way? You can't, because you don't have any longer a fragile, self-achieved holiness that you're trying to maintain. In the new life that Jesus brings, you get a new proximity. You move out into the world in confidence, knowing that your holiness is in him, and you're secure. You move out knowing that he loves you so much that he gave his life for you. And that allows you to move out into the world in mercy, sharing Jesus' love and compassion with people who are not like you. And so here's the challenge for this season of Lent. We're encouraging everyone to make room in their lives and around their table to invite someone into your home to share a meal. Make a list of people you might invite, maybe coworkers or neighbors, acquaintances, and just ask God to kind of show you who you should invite. And then step out and offer an invitation. And the point is here that you're not going to invite your best friends. Okay? Invite someone maybe that you pass by, but you really think, you know, no, I don't want to be friends with that person. That's the person you should invite. Or that neighbor that you don't even know their name. Reach out and just invite them to share a meal with you. You don't have to, you know, explain to them the Bible. Just share a meal together. Have a good time together. Get to know each other. See how God might work in that. And during the season of Lent, if you do that, we want to hear those stories about how you invited people and you shared a meal with them. And if we get those stories, then we'll share them with everyone so we can all be encouraged. Let's stand. Before we come to the table, let's sing this song.